This is VOA News. I'm Nicole Livas. U.S. President Donald Trump posted on Twitter Sunday he's optimistic about his summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un over U.S. efforts to end the threat of Pyongyang's nuclear weapons arsenal. After their first meeting last June, Mr. Trump boasted there was no longer a nuclear threat from North Korea. But as he meets Wednesday and Thursday with Kim in Vietnam, there's little concrete evidence that progress has been made to set the specific terms of promised denuclearization. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told CNN Sunday there's no change in U.S. economic sanctions targeting North Korea until it agrees to full, verifiable denuclearization. Venezuelan migrants helped clean debris from a bridge Sunday where troops loyal to President Nicolas Maduro fired tear gas on activists trying to deliver humanitarian aid in violent clashes that left four dead and some 300 injured on Saturday. Colombian President Iván Duque reinforced security around two international bridges near the city of Cúcuta and ordered them closed for 48 days to allow for the cleanup effort. He said acts of barbarism committed by Maduro's troops and blocking the aid required a forceful international response, which could come as early as Monday when U.S. Vice President Mike Pence travels to the Colombian capital for an emergency summit on Venezuela with foreign ministers from more than a dozen mostly conservative Latin American and Caribbean states. Nigerians waited for election results Sunday as vote counting continued from the nation's presidential poll. Voting continued in a few remote areas, and the Independent National Electoral Commission said it will reschedule elections where voting was disrupted Saturday. Incumbent Muhammadu Buhari and his main opponent, Atiku Abubakar, are already predicting victory. Security forces confirmed 16 people were killed in election-related violence. INEC is expected to start announcing the results on Monday. This is VOA News. The United Nations says the armed conflict in Afghanistan last year killed more than 3,800 civilians, including 927 children. That's the highest number of civilian deaths recorded in the past 10 years. The UN Assistance Mission in Afghanistan released a new report Sunday noting overall civilian casualties rose by 5% in 2018. It blamed a spike in suicide attacks by Islamic State's local affiliate. Officials in northeastern India say the death toll for people who drank tainted bootleg liquor has climbed to at least 140. Authorities say another 200 are hospitalized, some in critical condition. The situation has overwhelmed local hospitals. Officials say the victims are mainly women, tea plantation workers. Police say they've already arrested several people in the investigation. Hundreds of people die yearly in India from drinking cheap, illegally produced brew. Pope Francis compared the sexual abuse of children to human sacrifice at the close of the summit of the church's top bishops and leaders. The Catholic leaders were called to design a plan on how to deal with the predatory priests who have sexually abused children and adults for decades. The Vatican also announced Sunday it will soon issue a child protection policy and guidelines for preventing sexual abuse of minors for Vatican City State. A Bangladesh Air Force official says a flight from the capital Dhaka bound for Dubai made an emergency landing at the airport in Chittagong, Bangladesh, after a man allegedly attempted to hijack the plane. The official said there were no casualties and police arrested a suspect they described as a terrorist. Bangladeshi soldiers could be seen taking positions inside the airport. A top House Democrat threatened Sunday to call special counsel Robert Mueller to Capitol Hill to subpoena documents and take the Trump administration to court if necessary, if the full report on the Russia investigation is not made public. Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff told ABC's This Week his committee will be watching Attorney General William Barr to see if he were to try to bury any part of the report. Mueller is showing signs of wrapping up his nearly two-year-old investigation into possible coordination between Trump associates and Russia's efforts to sway the 2016 election. During his confirmation hearing last month, he said he ultimately would decide what the public sees and that any report will be, in his words, not Mueller's. British Prime Minister Theresa May delayed a vote on her Brexit deal in the Parliament Sunday, saying it should take place by March 12th. There's a little more than 2 weeks before the UK is due to leave the European Union. Three senior cabinet members had suggested Saturday they may break ranks with her and back amendments to delay Britain's departure unless there's a deal over the next week. But May told reporters Sunday as she traveled to Egypt, her negotiating team will return to Brussels on Tuesday for talks aimed at wringing concessions out of her reluctant EU partners. I'm Nicole Livas, VOA News. Thank you.
Good evening and welcome to Night Rain Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpuga. Well, polling have closed in Senegal's presidential election, where President Macky Sall is seeking a second term. Sall has four rivals, but 59-year-old Idriss Seck, a former prime minister, is considered among the strongest. His two previous bids for the presidency have been unsuccessful. In studio, I have my colleague here, Abdourahmane Dia of VOA's French to Africa service. What's the latest you're getting from there about the election?
Well, normally polls should start closing now. From what I've been told from the correspondents on the ground and also on social media is that so far there hasn't been major incidents and that turnouts may be high, at least from what people are seeing is going anywhere from 35% to 70%, depending on where you go. So it is expected to be high. So people are really turning out for this election.
Yeah, Senegal is known in Africa as one of the big democracies there. And as you say, voting seemed to have gone smoothly. No major incidents reported so far. This must be a credit to the organization of that election.
Yes, in Senegal, it is the Interior Ministry that has the logistical organization of the election, unlike some other countries where we have CENI, the Electoral Commission that is doing the process from the whole process, like in the DRC. In Senegal, they have the ministry that is basically organizing the election, and they have what they call SENA, which is basically a local observation committee that goes around looking, making sure that everything is going smoothly. So far, even with a minister that is from the ruling party, it didn't keep, for example, in 2012, Abdoulaye Wade from losing an election. So it is pretty credible, the process, generally speaking.
Yes, and the Sena says they expect results in the middle of the week. Why should it take that long?
Well, because each department has to compile the results, and by Tuesday, each department has to give their result. And by Thursday, I think the National Commission will proclaim the results. But before that, even starting tonight, we should get some tendencies because the local media has been doing a great job the past years, basically compiling the results and giving tendencies. And that's usually reflect almost the same results that the official commission are given. So there is no way that the results can be changed by some, every time because the results are public, right? And the major has electoral nights with experts, with statisticians, So usually, per experience, by tonight, later tonight or in the morning, we should know whether there would be a runoff or who probably would be the winner.
I see. And talking of runoff, what does the president... he has to have 51% of the vote to avoid a runoff, right?
50% plus one voice.
Iris.
Yes.
Well, thanks very much, my colleague Abdourahmane Dia from the VOA's French to Africa service. Now, let's move to Nigeria, where the accounting votes in Nigeria, and they are being counted in a closely fought general election where President Muhammadu Buhari, who is 76, is seeking a second term. His main challenger is former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, who is 72. My colleague Peter Klote is in Lagos. Peter, what's the latest right now?
INEC is collating results currently, the presidential election at the headquarters of INEC in Abuja. But so far, President Muhammad Buhari has won Ekiti State. That is what is being officially declared. However, the main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, is calling on INEC to declare Atiku Abubakar, the former vice president, and its presidential candidate winner of the 2019 presidential election. That is the latest development here.
I see. And what's the mood? How are people getting the partial results so far? Are they with excitement, with some doubts?
Yes, there is excitement in the air. This after people went to worship, Sunday worship, and they went home. The expectations are quite high. They want INEC to declare the official results so they know whom they chose presidentially to lead them in the next 4 years. And in other elections, the National Assembly elections or the House of Rep and senatorial elections, results are also expected soon as the Independent National Electoral Commission collates results at its headquarters currently.
I see. And otherwise, everything seems to be cool. And what do you, have you had, what are the, is there any reactions from the leading candidates so far?
Well, the main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, are calling on INEC to declare the presidential candidate winner of the elections. And incumbent president Muhammad Buhari is saying that there's no way he's going to win and lose this election. So these are the competing narratives here in Nigeria. However, it remains to be seen who will come up tops. The situation has calmed down. Places where there were violence and reported violence, you know, ballot papers were burned in some instances, ballot boxes were broken, and some voters were chased away and all that. INEC has yet to make official declaration on the rerun in some cases, and investigations are underway to prosecute the masterminds of those. So those are the latest developments here in Nigeria.
Thank you, Peter.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's Peter Klote, my colleague who is in Lagos covering the elections there. Let's move to Abuja, where there's my colleague Grace Abdu. Grace, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you doing today? Tell us, please, bring us up to date on what's going on over there.
Well, we just rose from a meeting that INEC called, which was the first after the election to just brief journalists on where INEC is in respect to the election that is still ongoing. As you have said, there are still a few states where voting is still going on due to logistic problems that they had. INEC has listed a good number of places where they had violence, where voting was disrupted, and INEC made it clear that voting will take place in a later date in those places.
I see. And how are the people you talk to taking the INEC pronouncements? What's their reaction?
Well, you know, when violence erupted, people took to the streets and calling on INEC to give them a chance, because they were saying that if INEC would just cancel election in those places and not allow them to go back to vote, then that means they are being denied their right as citizens to cast their vote. So INEC is taking that very seriously. As a matter of fact, even before the election, in the briefing that INEC had daily with stakeholders, INEC made it clear that if there should there be any problem in any voting centers that will warrant going, canceling the election and doing it all over again, INEC is ready to do that. So INEC is keeping its word on the promise that it made to Nigerians that everybody will be given a chance to exercise his right.
And what do people make of those reported cases of voting irregularities?
Well, INEC said they are looking at this situation on case-by-case basis. They are going to look at it and see if it is big enough to demand either for cancellation of a certain polling unit or if it will have any effect on the outcome of the election in either a ward or a state. So they are going to look at it on case-by-case basis.
And how would you rate INEC's communication to the people to make them understand what's going on? Is it been outcoming, or how do you rate it?
I think all journalists and even international community, I think are giving INEC an A, or maybe I would even say A+, because since the announcement of the postponement of the election, INEC took it upon itself to be calling stakeholders on daily basis. From Monday up until Friday, they had daily briefing at 3 o'clock every day in Abuja. And just as you know, yesterday was the day the election was conducted in most parts of the country, except for the very few places that they had difficulties. So, but immediately they are supposed to actually open the collection center at 6 p.m. But INEC decided to call the press and do a briefing before 6 p.m. when it will officially open the collection center in Abuja.
I see. Finally, when do we expect the next update from INEC?
That would be tonight, because they are opening the collection center this evening. Usually when they open, they also give a press statement. So we are expecting an update tonight.
All right. Thank you very much, Grace. Yes, and now in studio I have my colleague Aliyu Mustafa of Hausa Service. Aliyu, you just heard what's coming from there. What do you make of all this?
This is exciting stuff, Paul. Nigerians, as you know, love politics a lot, and this manifested in the millions of them who came out yesterday to vote, and to vote for one single president out of over 70 people who were contesting for the presidency. Like Grace stated, I think INEC is getting a big kudos from a lot of people. In fact, including international observers that our reporters spoke to, in terms of the way the polls were conducted. You remember the disappointment last week when the polls were postponed. But it appears like not just INEC, the Electoral Commission, but Nigerian voters, as well as official security agents and everybody, actually came out and did what they were expected to do. One fear everybody had yesterday was the fear of violence all over the country. But although in a national briefing just about an hour ago, the INEC chairman, Mahmoud Yakub, did mention that there were some cases of violence in some places, including Akwa Ibom, where they burned down a few vehicles, and in Kogi, where people, officials in particular, were attacked. Also in Ishun, where there was similar attacks, also with injuries. In fact, there was even a fatality in River State, where an official, I believe, it's probably a female INEC official, was shot dead. So, but by and large, given all that was at stake, I think Nigerians and the Electoral Commission's have to be commended for what they have been able to put together yesterday.
Yeah, and the biggest hurdle is if the INEC announces the winner, I think Nigeria has showed it can accept the result.
You know, Paul, I think one thing I really, really liked about what all the stakeholders, meaning INEC, the candidates, the voters, party officials, and others did after the postponement was how they all came out massively appealing to Nigerians in general to be calm, to be peaceful. And Nigerians did just that. Because given the character of Nigerians, especially when it comes to elections, there's always the tendency for violence. So the fact that President Muhammadu Buhari, Vice President, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, and the current contender for the PDP presidential candidate Atiku Abubakar, and INEC and the security officials all came out urging Nigerians not to cause any trouble, and they listen, I think it's a big plus, and it's a mark of respect for constitutionality in Nigeria. So given that, I know it is one thing to conduct elections peacefully. It's also another when it comes to actual outcome of the election. But I think what happened in 2015, you know, kind of set the stage for us when former President Goodluck Jonathan actually called Buhari and congratulated him on the phone, conceding defeat easily. And that really was a big historical moment for Nigeria. So where the expectation and the hope is that even in this case, whoever emerges the winner will be magnanimous and the loser will be will tolerate the defeat and just move on. Because Buhari had indicated earlier in some report that if he loses, he's going to stay in his village. He said he wasn't even going back to Abuja.
I see.
Yes.
Well, thanks very much, Aliyu. That's Aliyu Mustafa. My colleague is the managing editor at the Hausa Service. Now, let's briefly go back to Senegal. Journalist Ricky Shyrock is in Dakar also covering the election, and this afternoon was out talking with voters. He spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson about what they had to say.
The voting process was going pretty smooth, and the voting process was going very smoothly in the polling stations in Dakar that I visited. People were filing in and out. It was not even very long lines. I was there in the early afternoon. I spoke to an election supervisor at one of the polling stations. He said that everything had been going smoothly as far as he knew. He had heard no reports that there were any problems at any of the other polling stations.
What are people saying about the process? Do they have any complaints about long lines or anything like that?
I didn't hear any complaints about long lines. I didn't see any long lines. Again, I was there around noon. Voting had opened at 8 a.m. But for the most part, it just seemed to be going extremely smoothly and quietly. I'm in Dakar. The capital is pretty calm on a Sunday anyway. A little bit less calm with people moving around a bit more, but a little bit more traffic. But for the most part, it's extremely calm.
President Macky Sall is widely expected to win re-election, but has there been anything in this campaign that has perhaps changed any of sort of the public dialogue in what people hope for as the country moves forward?
So Macky Sall's platform has the plan Senegal Emergent, the plan of emerging Senegal, is one that people have been, when I spoke with people who are voting for Macky Sall, they wanted him to continue the infrastructure plans that he had already started. And again, he didn't actually start them. He was continuing on the work often of his predecessor, Abdoulaye Wade. But there was a very anti-establishment candidate, Ousmane Sonko. He's 44. He's extremely young. A lot of his support was coming from the youth. He talked about Senegal leaving the CIFA, that they are too dependent or they are too involved, let's say, with the former colonial power, France, when it comes to their monetary policy. He talked about reworking contracts with oil companies. And while Macky Sall's plan very much is one to attract foreign investment, Ousmane Sonko's platform talked a lot about how they need to make sure that the investment that's coming is benefiting Senegalese. And I think moving forward, you'll see that Macky Sall might start addressing these issues. Leaving the FIFA is something that's discussed not just in Senegal at this point. And I think that he's also come under criticism for the oil contract. So I think maybe he will reflect I think that dialogue will continue, I think, especially because it has been picked up by the youth population.
That was VOA reporter Rick Shyrock in Senegal speaking with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson. Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir swore in a new prime minister today as hundreds of demonstrators defied the state of emergency and rallied in Omdurman and other cities. The French news agency reports that police responded to the protesters with tear gas. Sudanese opposition groups, including the influential trade union association that is leading political protests against the government, are saying they will continue the demonstrations against Bashir. Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Protesters continue to chant slogans against the government and President Bashir overnight after initial hopes that he was stepping down were dashed by a televised speech he made to the nation. Bashir says he is declaring a state of emergency across the country for a one-year period and dissolving both the national and provincial governments, urging citizens to shun chaos in the streets and promising leniency to young people involved in demonstrations. Bashir made further changes Saturday, naming Defense Minister General Awad Mohammed Ibn Auf as his new vice president. He also named former provincial governor Mohamed Taher Ayla to be the new prime minister. Sudanese journalist Osman Al-Mirghani told several Arab news channels that he did not think the changes Bashir announced were sufficient, insisting the goal of the opposition remained the ouster of the president. He says the changes announced by the president merely provide fresh impetus for further popular protests and are the next step toward the ultimate ouster of President Bashir. Arab media reported that Mirghani was arrested after calling for Bashir's ouster. Sudan's intelligence ministry also continued to prevent opposition figures from speaking to Arab TV channels, interrupting many people as they spoke. U.S. broadcaster Al Hurra TV reported that several dozen opposition figures have been arrested during the past 48 hours. The Sudanese Association of Trade Unions has called for more protests against the government and President Bashir, insisting he must step down. Despite the calls, the intensity of protests appeared to diminish a notch Saturday afternoon as many people adopted a wait-and-see attitude. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq tells VOA he thinks the goal of Bashir's political shuffle is to divide the opposition.
The aim is that he wanted to break down the opposition between those who would accept the concession and see that this is okay enough now, and others, the fanatics, he wants to isolate them and then target them.
Sadiq does not believe, however, that the strategy will work in the long term. Bashir, he argues, is making the same kinds of concessions that former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak and former Tunisian President Zain al-Abidine Ben Ali made before they were forced to resign. But the problem with Bashir is that he has nowhere to go. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Pitié de nos malades. Pitié.
This is the Voice of America in Washington, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And coming up in the second part of the program, sports. And then a commentary by Dr. James Jonah and our Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent. And in Nightline Africa Sports, Mali beat Senegal 3-2 on penalties to win the 2019 Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations in Niger on Sunday. The much-anticipated final had finished 1-1 after 90 minutes and extra time. Senegal's Dion Lopé, Amadou Ndiaye and Osenu Niang were the unfortunate players to miss spot kicks, giving Mali their first Under-20 continental title. The final was a repeat of the opening Group B match, with Senegal 1-2-0 in Maradi. Coming to Sunday's final, Senegal had won all four of the matches they had played in Niger. On Saturday, South Africa beat Nigeria 5-3 on penalties to take third place at the tournament after the match had finished goalless. All four teams, South Africa, Nigeria, Mali and Senegal, will now begin their preparation for the Under-20 World Cup, which kicks off in Poland in May. The National Basketball Association and International Basketball Federation have launched a professional league in Africa in January 2020. The Basketball Africa League, BAL, will feature 12 teams from at least 6 African countries. FIBA Africa's executive director, Alphonse Bile, said the league will help players compete in the best possible environment. Former U.S. President Barack Obama has backed the plans, while NBA legend Michael Jordan, who is now the Charlotte Hornets chairman, was at the launch event in North Carolina. The NBA and FIBA will conduct qualification tournaments to identify which teams from several African countries, including Angola, Egypt, Kenya, Morocco, Nigeria, Rwanda, Senegal, South Africa, and Tunisia, can compete in the league. No more than 2 teams from the same country will be eligible to play in the league. The NBA has seen 80 current and former players from Africa or with family links to the continent compete, including Hall of Famers Hakeem Olajuwon from Nigeria and Dikembe Mutombo from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Finally, in athletics, Steeplechase specialist Amos Kirui upstaged some of his most established domestic rivals to win the hotly contested senior men's race at the Kenyan Cross Country Championships in Eldoret on Saturday. The 2016 World Under-20 Steeplechase champion sprinted away from a field that included 2-time World Cross Country champion Geoffrey Kamworor and World Under-20 10,000 meters champion Ronex Kipruto to win comfortably by 7 seconds, securing his spot on the Kenyan team for the IAAF World Cross Country Championships 2019. World 5,000 meters champion Helen Obiri dominated the senior women's race, while Samuel Chebole and Beatrice Chebet were convincing winners of the under-20 races as the country's top athletes battled it out for places on Kenya's World Cross Country squad. And that's about it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports.
It's Sunday here on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect with music from across the continent.
nakomendea mi pressure kizongo zongo. Tagwe mukwano guno Togo zanyi sagwe kwa tempola oh. Toku ita kuyomba na olava Banga iwe senga nkulize hani Tetuka Olwayo mnange Obanga gamba Tife na yenga nkukosechi to go to get
Chona uchimani na luli na kuolugoye neloto ndavye echiroye kwewe nota nelwe sise tumumu baka sista wange ya kukume echiro olemeo kutia mungu kuba chizibu nino kufuba no nyansimi tuazime eneme Chukako kale tonyinga tokaba ninda wikienja sente zizo nenze kumilimu
Sorry.
Mose,
obulumi mponye
mbadde nkulowooza konze kanzi kyemisinde kulabeko katono ngende njiye.
Tiko lulo lumese Nempeo ya komose Toneka Kuba wanonsiao Aba mkwara bajeo Na yeze na beresa Mbaka mbachimu Zena loja na mala
Na ngewento Kwa kalanga nzoli mujawa
Nentalu na kuwedu
Chejo
Zerava numa
Emirimu anti jeminji
Unichisera oh. Bankulinze Oba Bize ah. Soka Otunse Atera ongenda
ومنازي هي هبل راسيها انا بغيت نجيب ناسي بيمر وعندي فاسية Christian Grey, but please, baby, you can call me Christian Gris. I'll make you fall in love, I'm a thief with the hearts. To me, it's an art. Baby, your eyes don't lie. I can see you want a little bit of me in your life. I can treat you like the princess you are, but behind closed doors, we could do it all. Ladies first, when I open doors, I got an open mind, let me open yours. You can come see me while I'm on tour, but till then, besito mi amor. Watching you, watching me, watching you, watching me, yeah. And I'm gonna give you what's your arm around. Watching you, watching me, yeah. And I'm gonna give you what's your arm around.
Twister, hey, why you do the lie? and nothing there to the shake you. Where they waste you? I see you there for Twitter, your name for Insta, sexy food, delicious twister. Hey. Why you do the shy, yeah? When you know, say you fine, yeah. Don't be like you. Shopping, take a selfie, chakam, chakam. You post them up, they tag your maga, bagam, bagam. You day they form me koi when you day baja. Now who you day deceive you? Hey, you see G-Wagon, chakam. You day big mansion, chakam. Even for toilet mirror, chakam. Snapchatting video, chakam.
Yes, that was our Sunday music spot on here on Net in Africa from the English service of the Voice of America. Now, let's take a closer look at Africa, one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Take it away, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. After months of widespread street demonstration in the Sudan, which began on 19th December last year, due to cuts in subsidies for bread and fuel, President Omar Hassan al-Bashir has taken a gamble to resolve the crisis. In a major speech at the presidential palace in Khartoum, President al-Bashir at times sounded conciliatory to the protesters, but in the end showed determination to continue in office. He declared a one-year state of emergency, abolished the federal government as well as the regional assemblies. After his speech, he issued two decrees which appointed military and security officials in the state assemblies and a military government in the sense in the federal government, except that of his previous cabinet, five remain, including foreign and defense. As may be recalled, during the street demonstration, President al-Bashir had refused to heed the call of the protesters that he should resign. He had said that if they want him to resign, they would have to wait until the end of his term in 2020. In addition, during the demonstration, he paid visits to the neighboring countries, Cairo, to Syria, to Qatar, and mend fences with Eritrea, trying to ensure that he is at peace with his neighbors. The question now is, what will the opposition do? Are they going to respond peacefully to his call for dialogue in the Sudan? Or will the velvet gloves in an iron fist work now in the Sudan? What is helping Bashir right now is a growing international consensus that regime change policies from outside are often disastrous and counterproductive. And they point out to Iraq, to Libya, to Syria, and to Egypt. So there is not much stomach for anyone trying to engineer regime change in the Sudan and other places. So he has an opportunity to see whether the protesters would enter into a dialogue. But the prospects are not bright. After his speech, demonstrations continued in parts of the Sudan, indicating that the protesters are not going to accept lying down the state of emergency. But they have to take into account that the new changes announced by President al-Bashir meant that the military are now in a key situation in the Sudan. During the demonstrations, there were suggestions being made that the president might be losing the support of the military. No one can tell whether the new approach being made by President al-Bashir was the result of consultations with the army. But there is no doubt that things may now turn more bloody now that the military are now in control in the regional assembly and are now firmly supporting the president. So this is a crucial time for the Sudan and for the opposition to see whether this is a window of opportunity to determine whether changes could be brought about in the Sudan peacefully. If this is not the case, then there are grave danger for the Sudan in the coming days. I thank you.
That was One Man Points of View, a commentary by Dr. James Joner, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Netland Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us tonight. Hope you enjoyed the program. And as you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Join us again on Saturday. Have a very good evening.